Get ready for a week-long celebration of music, community, and fabulous fun with Joy Radiothon 2024. Joy has the largest collection of rainbow podcast content in the world, and you can help keep us out loud and proud by donating during Joy Radiothon 2024. Just go to joy.org.au/radiothon. Mark it in your calendars because Joy Radiothon returns June 1st to 7th. And remember, we all flourish with joy.
It's sci-fi and squeeze, Jim, but not as we know it.
On Joy 94.9.
One station in all the world, a chosen station.
To boldly go where no show has gone before.
Sci-fi and Squeam.
On Joy 94.9.
And welcome to Sci-Fi and Squeam on Joy 94.9. Cool, now we found love, yeah. Well, you'll find plenty of love tonight on Sci-Fi and Squeam because coming up we've got some interviews with some filmmakers. Who have we got?
We've got Glenn Triggs, director of 41, mm-hmm. which you spoke to earlier this week.
Yeah, that's right. Mm. And Indie Game, the movie, which is by James Swirsky and Luzanne Pajot. Unfortunately, I could only get James on the phone line. And that's for the film that's going to be coming out with Game Masters, which is on at Acme. So that's pretty cool.
And she said Game Masters.
Game Masters, not Gay Masters.
That sounds like something dirty.
Something else. And also we'll be looking at Rec 3, Genesis. So it's the third one, obviously, of the trilogy, that franchise from Spain, all about zombies and bridal dresses.
Later on in the evening, we have the news, mm-hmm. which I prepared myself.
Sci-fi and squeamish news. Cool.
And
The Raid.
The 30 Raid.
Floors of Mayhem. Tell us about that movie, Mitch.
Well, you just summarised it up. Deep in the heart of Jakarta's slums lies an independable multi-level safe house for the world's most dangerous killers and villains and gangsters. Until now, here come the special police squad, and this elite squad are... for revenge. It's payback time. Directed by Gareth Evans, includes loads of special features too. 30 Floors of Martial Arts Mayhem, yeah. Starring Iko Uwais.
Mm.
And this was a really, really good movie. It's an Indonesian movie.
Yeah,
and
it's pretty awesome.
It's just violence.
It's like, so violent.
Stabbing,
it's awesome,
bloodying,
if you
kicking.
Love that sort of thing.
I think it was only like 10 levels. But the thing is, he falls down the building twice.
Yeah.
And then you have to climb back up or die.
It's a lot of fun. So if you love your action movies with some martial arts and there's some pretty special stuff in there and lots of stunt effects, well, you're going to love this movie.
And we also have a little bit of music coming up later in the evening by Lucky Lee and Avengers in Sci-Fi.
Yeah, now, they're interesting.
Tell us about Avengers in Sci-Fi, Sonia.
Well, they're Japanese, actually, which is cool. And they are... described as doing spaceship rock and spacey dance rock. And they're all classmates at, I hope I get this right, Kanagawa. And they formed the band in 2002. They've been going since that time. And I just love them.
You listening to Asian pop?
Well,
what?
No, this is space rock. It's perfect
space
for the
rock.
Show. So we'll be playing that a bit later.
What's space rock? I don't know. It's just like crazy.
Avengers and sci-fi.
Avengers and sci-fi.
They're space rock. Mm.
Do you want to go to a track now?
Yeah.
This is Sci-Fi and Squeam on Joy 94.9.
I'm John O'Jerry, Geeks Out from the United States of America sends much love to Sci-Fi and Squeam on Joy 94.9, the best LGBTQ radio show in all of Australia.
Sci-Fi and Squeam. And we have a special interview on the phone line with director, creator of something called 41. It's Glenn Triggs on the phone. Welcome to the show, Glenn. Okay, so Glenn Triggs, it's been a while since we've spoken to you.
Yes, it has, yeah.
I think it's been about a year and just over a year. I think it might have been April or May when we first spoke.
I think one of the last times I spoke to you was also on the Peter Jackson show.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Which is good fun.
And prior to that, we did an X-Files one, didn't we?
Yeah.
Pretty sure.
Right, yeah.
Yeah. We're talking about 41. You've come back from the US and you've done how many festivals with the film?
It was in two festivals. We got 4 nominations for the Maverick Movie Awards. We got a Golden Ace Award at the Las Vegas Film Festival.
Now, before I ask you what these awards are all about, for our listeners, can you tell us what 41's premise is about?
Film? Yeah, sure. 41, it's a feature film. It's a drama. It's about a young man who discovers a hole in the floor of a local motel that leads to yesterday. Mm-hmm. So it's a time travel film. Lots of twists and turns. We spent about 2 years making the film. Well, I spent about 2 years making the film, I should say. All the cast and crew spent about 1 year making it. We shot it on a Canon 5D for about $10,000 in total.
Wow.
Yeah, it's been heaps of fun. It was a great experience. It's good that it's, yeah, doing good things in the festival world.
I have seen the film, so I don't want to spoil it too much for our listeners.
Yep, yep.
But very impressive. I mean, when I first saw it, because prior to that, you've done something called Cinemaphobia.
Yes.
And that was very different from this film. Very different. So when I sat down to watch it, the first time I watched it, I really noticed the difference, firstly, in the cinematic quality of it. And it's just this Canon 5D you're talking about. Is that the difference I'm experiencing, which is such clarity, such... Not, I wouldn't call it high definition, but
yeah, it's
very
more
much
of a film look. Like the Canon 5D has a very large sensor in it, mm-hmm. which basically means you get a lot of depth of field. So the background is usually out of focus if you've got a close-up of someone's face.
Okay.
And that's basically what film sort of looks like. With Cinemaphobia, that was shot on a more expensive camera. It didn't have the depth of field, so it gave it more of like a TV look rather than a film look, which is easy to make with a smaller sensor, but with the Canon 5D, it's harder to keep things in focus, but you do get that really nice cinematic look to it.
We get into the story, which, yeah, I don't want to, you know, spoil it for people. What inspired you to make a film that is such a departure of what you've done? You did it, basically, it was a slasher, Cinemaphobia, I guess.
Yeah.
To do, this is a kind of science fiction, but it's time travelling. It's very difficult to do. What made you think you could do this, pull this off?
Well, when I made Cinemaphobia, I knew it was a very horrific, you know, teenage sort of movie that I sort of set out to make. And when I looked back on it, I kind of thought, you know, if that's the last film that I make, I'm going to be pretty disappointed. So I thought, what's something that I really want to do? Like, what do I really get out a lot and stuff like that? So I'm a very science-minded sort of person to some degree, I guess. I love science fiction. I love drama films. So I thought I'll sort of mix them two together. Came up with a very basic premise, which is basically just, you know, a hole in the floor of a motel. I have no idea exactly where that came from, but it just seemed to be something that was just a bit obscure, that could also be very realistic in a science fiction sort of themed idea. Something that would be easy to film, but the thing that turned out to be the hardest part was just the twists and turns, because time travel tends to add layers of complications onto.
She was a vampire who could never see the light of day.
He was a zombie shuffling his way through the afterlife.
Love would bring them together,
but human flesh would tear them apart.
They were doomed to be on Sci-Fi and Scream.
Tuesday nights from 10 on Joy 94.9.
Yeah, doing time travel, and anyone who's read any sci-fi knows, look, if you've read H.G. Wells, I mean, you know what happens. You start going back in time to change things, you can change potentially things that you couldn't alter, but you're altering time. What a hell of a job to write a script, I mean.
I wanted to make it slightly different from most time travel films where it doesn't actually make sense, because to some degree, like most time travel films do make sense. Like,
yeah, they try to work it out. Yeah,
yeah, you can go like, you know, Marty McFly can go back and actually change things that will affect the future. Where this film, I wanted it to be that the whole movie was such like a paradox that if you think about it, it doesn't actually make sense. Like it's sort of like what happened first, the chicken or the egg type of question, I guess. And it's just got this circular motion to it that can be quite confusing. It confuses me when I think about it too much sometimes. It was very confusing, but at the same, like I originally, when I edited the film for the first cut, it was very cryptic and it didn't necessarily make much sense at all. And I showed a few people and they were just very confused, and it kind of was disappointing to me because, you know, I wanted them to have this emotional reaction to different elements of the film and they weren't getting it because they didn't actually understand what was happening. So I had to go back and just make simple changes just to sort of fill in the gap. And that was mainly done with editing. And that just seemed to, people got it straight away. Yeah, like my parents understood it and I didn't think, you know, I thought that'd be the last people to understand it, but my mom got it perfectly.
Look, you finished the film. When did the whole Las Vegas thing, going to the festival, when did that happen? Were you invited or how does it work?
With the festival thing, it usually works. You submit the film to different festivals. I submitted the film to 12 film festivals, and 3 film festivals have been announced. And so we got into 2 of those festivals. So 2 out of 3 isn't too bad. And so there's still a few more festivals up and coming, but just a matter of just waiting to see. Hopefully we'll get into a few more, which will be good. Yeah, we got an award, so it was good.
Viva Las Vegas Maverick Award. Yeah. You ever thought of yourself as a maverick?
Not really, no, no. Not at all.
So what sort of films were you up against? What sort of films do they take? Is it a sci-fi or horror festival or not?
No, it was just quite a general sort of film festival. They kind of just take a lot of them were international films.
Okay.
I think out of all the films, I think there was one other Australian film that was in there. It was good fun over there because they had like a filmmakers panel, which I was part of. I don't think too hot yet. It's kind of those weird things like it was a great experience over there, but I don't try to think of it as like, you know, the best thing in the world.
Where to next? Did you go to the second festival, the second one that accepted it so far?
The Maverick Film Festival, that is a more of like a distribution festival. So it's not, they don't actually screen the films. They kind of have this, it's kind of a weird festival. They just get all the different films. I think last year's film was an Australian film that won actually, which is quite good. They get all the films in and they, you know, there's winners announced and awards given out, but they don't actually have a screening, which is strange. I'm sure.
This
one's in New York.
It's in New York, cool.
So what they do is after that, all the films get sent off to distribution agencies, sort of like a springboard. But anyway, we got 4 nominations in that, so it's something, you know, out of 5,000 films or whatever it was, which is quite good. At the moment, yeah, I'm just sort of just hoping for the rest of the festivals, like the Sundance Festival's coming up and all that sort of thing. Yeah. So
when's that? January 2013?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, they announced it in December, I'm pretty sure. Yeah, fingers crossed. I don't like to assume that I'm going to get in, so anything's possible.
Well, I might wrap it up in a moment, but anything else you want to say about 41? Where will it play in Australia?
We're setting up a few more screenings really soon. They'll be on the website,
cool.
Which is 41film.com. We've had a few screenings already and we'll have them all. So, yeah, people just want to look on the website. You know, there's lots of making of videos on there as well, and the trailer's on there too.
Wonderful. From Sci-Fi and Squeam, in any case. So,
excellent.
Look, I hope you do get a festival in Oz. All the best. Seriously, Glenn. And then it's great to talk to you again.
Great. No, thank you for having me on the show.
Thanks again for coming on to Sci-Fi and Squeam. Glenn Triggs, the maker of 41. See it, people. We really have to, because you have to support local filmmakers in genre.
Time to do some killing.
Let's go.
This is Sci-Fi and Squeam on Joy 94.9. Yes, we had a little chat with Glenn Triggs earlier in the week, the creator and director and writer of something called 41. You can head to his website to find out heaps more about that. Just go to darkepic.net for more information about the movie 41. So thanks again, Glenn, for chatting to us. We'll catch up with you as you develop and make even more awesome movies. All right. Now, what have we got coming up next? We've got
the news?
Indie Game, the movie.
Yes, an interview.
But we've also got you doing the news.
We've also got the news.
Can't forget that.
And we've also got some music later on. So Indie Game coming up.
And also I'll be chatting about something called Wreck Free Genesis. We'll squeeze it in there in the show, I reckon.
Now, do you think we should go to the news?
I reckon you should do it.
Awesome. And in news today, we have Comic 2000 AD turns 35 this year. The mother of iconic character Judge Dredd and epic series in British comic art history, with Dredd 3D coming to Australia October 25th, this comic has come a long way. Unlike the previous Judge Dredd movie, Carl Urban has confirmed that the helmet will never come off to keep true to the comic book character in the new movie. In 1995, Judge Dredd movie grossed over $110 million worldwide. Sylvester Stallone's overacting kind of made the movie great. He was kind of like... I didn't understand what he was saying a lot of the time. But it's a massively, massively iconic movie. Capcom have announced a brand new IP entitled Remember Me, a sci-fi action adventure revolving around a young memory hunter. To be more specific, Remember Me tells the story of Nilan, an elite memory hunter who is not only incredibly athletic and trained in martial arts, but also has the special ability to break into people's minds and steal or even change their memories. The adventure is set in Neo Paris, the year 2084. Sounds like a pretty well-rounded individual, but the problem is Nilan finds her own memories erased. In the incident, it sends her on her own mission to reclaim her identity. The game is expected to hit PS3 and Xbox in May 2013. A PC version was also announced. Though Capcom's habits are any indication may come with console versions as well.
Oh.
Capcom usually. And the actual main character looks a lot like the girl with the tattoo.
Girl dragon, with the dragon tattoo.
Yes.
Oh.
Looks a lot like her.
Rumi.
Rumi.
Rumi Rapashi. Rumi.
And that is news.
Who is in Prometheus?
For today.
Cool. All right. What should we do next?
We're going into the Indie Games interview.
Yep.
With?
And that's with James Swirsky. Now, he's just one of the co-makers. Unfortunately, Lisanne Pajot, the other director, wasn't available at the time. And these are a couple of Canadians that wowed everybody with this awesome film, this independent game about independent game makers. There you go.
I say let's just get into it.
Let's get into it.
This is Sci-Fi and Scream on Joy 94.9.
Welcome to Sci-Fi and Scream, James Swirsky. And it's a shame that Lisanne couldn't make it.
Lisanne.
So what is the film about? It's Indie Game, the movie. It's a very interesting documentary. And you're one of the creators of it, James Swirsky and Lisanne Pajot, both directors and producers of the film. Can you tell us, for our listeners, a little brief synopsis of what Indie Game, the movie, is all about?
A feature-length documentary about making video games. Specifically, it's about making independent video games. These are not games like Call of Duty or Madden or games made by 100 or 1,000 people. These are games made by usually teams of one or two people. You know, sometimes a little bit more, but usually around there. End up getting these really interesting personal games. These personal games that are kind of doing something different, and they feel different. In many cases, some of the best indie games are kind of these personal expressions. The creators is kind of basic. If these people were writers, they'd make a novel. If these people were filmmakers, they'd make a film, but they're not. They're game designers, and they make a game to kind of express what they want to say, where these people are incredibly invested in making the game and getting the game out there and having people receive the game in the way they want it to. The right independent game, the right time, can like hit it really big, and the click of a button of making a game live can actually change someone's life. They could kind of become a millionaire, not overnight. Talk about digital distribution and how a lot of these guys with digital distribution, the right independent game at the right time with the right audience can like really strike a chord and actually change their lives overnight, you know, just by kind of putting it out there. And, you know, they could become millionaires. Like, teams of one or two people can, you know, sell a million copies of a game. And so there's this weird, interesting commercial dynamic that kind of, like, overlays this landscape of making these really personal, innovative games that just kind of creates a whole bunch of, you know, just interesting stories.
That's the ticket, pretty much what sold me when I was watching it. I was amazed at the progress, you know, and the process itself of what these, I was going to say filmmakers almost, because you're right, they could be artists of any type, and maybe this is one of the few times a film has been made that looks at a developer, games programmer, and those people, and looks at them curiously in the artistic light. And I haven't seen that done before in a film. So I think that's remarkable what you've been able to achieve.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, like when we were considering doing this, one of the things that drew us to the movie and doing this movie is the fact that we looked around and we were shocked to find out that it didn't exist, because it feels like a movie, like given that how big games are these days, like bigger than music, it's bigger than film, like it feels like the story should already be out there. And I think a lot of people who are seeing the movie and really reacting to it, that's kind of one of the things that they're reacting to, is this kind of collective, yes, finally, they're telling my story.
It's unusual, because most of the films that you find, or you come across, that are about video games as a topic, as a subject matter, it's a project normally about from a fan's point of view, and from the fan itself, or should I say a gamer, or an addict, whatever they like to be called. You know, you've got King of Kong, and recently the Tetris one, Ecstasy of Order, the Tetris Masters, which are wonderful movies, but they're not about the people that made them. So this is a first.
Yeah.
Are you prepared for the zombie apocalypse? In case of emergency, break glass and tune in to Joy 94.9 on a Tuesday night for Sci-Fi and Scream.
This is Sonia on Sci-Fi and Scream with Mitch. Hello, hello.
Hello, hello. Mm-hmm.
And just to forward announce the indie game, the movie, the rest of that interview I had with James Swirsky, one of the creators of this film. This is a movie that's going to be playing at Acme from Thursday the 23rd of August from 7 p.m. and 9 p.m. sessions. It's on their sort of a mini long play. So that's at Acme Cinemas. Check it out. It's an awesome doco about web designers Ed McMillan, programmer Tommy Renifus, who makes something called Super Meat Boy. and Phil Fish, who spent 4 years in the making of one game called Fez. So, hey, it's even got Jonathan Blow on there, the guy who developed Braid, one of the highest-ranking and highest-rated independent games of all time. So let's have a listen to the rest of that interview here on Sci-Fi and Scream.
Everyone understands what it's like to play a game. Even if they don't, they understand it. But not everyone knows, and it's kind of a tougher thing to tackle to kind of properly communicate what it's like to make a game. So I could see, you know, like it makes sense that we got the player's perspective first, and now we're kind of getting behind the scenes.
Now, what inspired you guys, both of you, to take on such a film venture as this? I believe it's your first time as a full feature. Why games?
Yeah, basically, we, Lizanne and I, have been working together producing corporate video and commercial video here in Canada kind of like 8 or 9 years, almost 10 years now. And we've always kind of wanted to do something larger, something more feature-like. And the way we got onto this topic, I'm kind of a former gamer. Lizanne has never really touched games. Okay. So I always kind of had an interest in games. But the way we got onto this topic was we were actually commissioned to do a short documentary on a few people here in our hometown of Winnipeg. It was a, kind of like a government-funded thing. And one of the documentaries we had to do, it was a five-minute documentary, and it was about be done on this guy named Alec Holoka, who was an independent game designer who, in 2008, made this game called Aquaria with a partner. And this game was made by two people and went on to win, like, the biggest prize you could possibly win in independent gaming. And wow. It was this rousing success and had, like, these wonderful fans all around the world. And we just thought it was, you know, really, really interesting story. But when going into it, we kind of thought it was just going to be like this fun little piece about the guy who made a game, and that's pretty cool. In talking to Alec and kind of making this piece, we discovered that the story was actually much more deeper than we ever thought it could be. And it was much more dramatic and emotional than we ever thought it could be. It was this underwater happy tale. And then over the course of making the game, it ended up, he got more and more emotionally invested into it, and it ended up kind of reflecting all the emotions that he was going through while making the game. And it started out as this, you know, kind of like happy, bright adventure thing, and ended up being like this much more darker, emotional thing. And it was just this story of a guy pouring everything he had into the game, and then and ending up having like this great success story. And we just were really compelled to the idea of games as expression, and games as an extension of oneself. Shortly after that, we went down to San Francisco for the Game Developers Conference. We're hanging around all these independent guys and hearing story after story, just like Alex. And we kind of like thought to ourselves, well, you know, these stories are amazingly compelling. Like, if we can get this on film, this would be a very interesting documentary. And then we also looked around the landscape of documentaries, and we're, again, like shocked to see that this movie didn't exist yet. Like, no one was telling the story of game design. And so we thought we'd set out to tell the story of game design from as personal a perspective as we could. 2.5 years of our lives, we actually thought it would take 1 year. We thought it would take 1 year, and it would kind of ended up growing a life of its own.
Which brings me to the next question. How different is this film and your journey, both of you personally, to your own experience of making this film in comparison to a game designer, game developer that you were filming?
Yeah, it's kind of crazy. The parallels between like our experience making the film and the guys in the movie, pretty uncanny. You know, like we're kind of two people working on our own, wearing many, many hats and kind of doing everything on this movie and using very accessible technology to make something that we're very passionate about and then put it out into the world. And we're filming teams of one or two guys using very accessible technology, kind of pouring everything they have to make this personal story and putting it out into the world. And it just seems like every emotional arc and up and down that happens in the movie actually happened to us in the movie. It felt like our story. It felt like we were filming ourselves like 6 months into the future. It got to the point where Lizanne and I would actually talk using clips in the movie. Like, we'd just kind of like reenact the movie to each other to effectively communicate how we felt. Weird thing is, it worked. Yeah.
Surprised you didn't need therapy after that.
Oh, yeah, no, it's coming later.
I mean, you've both done the directing, writing, editing, camera work. Now the film has done a few festivals. Like, it's so far, the response has been really positive. Can you tell us about some of that?
Yeah. It started sending it off to festivals and got really, really good responses. But it was still, like, this very small sample size. But then we got this really great response from a very great festival, the Sundance Film Festival. Which is, you know, a huge festival. They invited us down there to be in competition. And so prior to showing the film at Sundance and premiering it, we actually only showed it to 28 people. People have been responding to it in ways that, you know, we could only dream of. You know, they kind of like, they watch it and come up to us after, and they're like, they actually tell us, like, I don't play video games. I actually hate video games, and I don't see anything of value in them. And, you know, I love your movie, and I look at video games different now. Mm. And, you know, then, you know, like, it doesn't turn them into gamers, but they're like, I now have an appreciation.
All right, James.
Thank you so much.
Take care. Ooh.
This is Sci-Fi and Scream on Joy 94.9.
That was James Swirsky. Thank you, James, and thanks to Acme for the chance to interview the creative indie game, the movie. All right. We missed the groan, the zombie groan, because we're talking about zombies. Are we? Or are they infecteds? I don't know. It's up to you. What do you think of Rec, the franchise? Rec 3 Genesis is out now. This popular Infecteds franchise returns from its Spanish roots and what I guess is the equivalent of what a George Romero franchise is like to English speakers, or Dawn of the Dead franchise, or whatever you like to think of it. Well, maybe it's more like a 28 Days Later. I don't know, but it's out. And Rec 3 Genesis is the 2012 Spanish horror film directed by Paco Plaza. Now, this is the third time he's been out to do these particular series of zombie movies, and so being the third installment, we do hope that it's an improvement on the second, which wasn't that fantastic. Love the first one. If you've not seen it, you definitely should. It's set in an apartment where people are with handheld cameras are trying to see the day in the life of a fire brigade being called to an emergency. And in this case, it's an older woman. In the first film, an older woman who's infected and with some sort of virus from the bite of a dog. Now, a dog appears again in the third one, but this time it's a wedding party. Yes, people are getting married. And what a great place to set something like a zombie infection. At a wedding party.
That sounds amazing. I love it. Like an old woman zombie to begin with.
No, that's the first one.
Yeah, this to
one,
begin with. And then
the
a
uncle,
wedding.
An
yeah.
uncle gets bitten by a dog during getting dressed for the wedding. And he goes, no, I'm okay. I'm all right. I just feel a bit hot and sweaty. Next minute, he's throwing up blood all over the, you know, wedding cake. And it goes absolutely mad after that. As you can imagine, people getting bitten and attacked left, right and centre. But I don't want to spoil it because people need to see this. Look, it has some great moments, especially with some of the handheld camera, but then it veers away from that, like the original was, very much handheld, and instead we just follow the guests as they and their plight, and in particular the groom and the bride who gets separated, of course, during this madness and chaos. But they do get reunited, but that's all I'll say.
That's lovely.
It's very, very romantic. Now, one of the great scenes is the chainsaw scene. The bride isn't stripped bare, but she's covered in blood all over, a beautiful white wedding dress, and she's got a chainsaw, and let's just say, yeah, watch out if you're a zombie, because this woman doesn't want anything to ruin her special day.
I love how the kind of appealing thing of that is the white wedding dress.
Mm.
Like the white purity of it.
And the blood and bits
the garden,
of brain.
Someone running around the garden infected.
Yeah. So yeah, look, it's it's going to be followed by a fourth film, whether you like it or not. Rec 4 Apocalypse. So this one's Genesis, so it does have some biblical references. I think it kind of falls down a bit there. It's a bit weird because you see the zombies in the mirror and they look like corpses from hell. Like they look a lot more decayed than they are because they're only like a few hours old as a zombie. So not quite up to it.
Yeah, no. When it becomes apocalyptic, that's when it's kind of like...
Yeah, a little too serious, a little too intense. But hey, it's worthwhile seeing Leticia Adolera, who plays the bride. She's a Spanish actress, obviously, and she's amazing in her blood-covered bridal gown with a chainsaw. Awesome. All right, I'm giving it out of 5. I'm giving it a 3.5 just for that scene where she goes mad with the chainsaw, as you would on your wedding day if it doesn't turn out well. All right, so head along to that if you get a chance. What else? Well, there's something called Geek On Magazine. Now, this is through possible.com/Geek On Magazine. You can head there. Geek culture is becoming ever popular, and so many subgenres of the term geek, especially so in Australia. And that's where this group of geeks have got together, or are getting together, to produce, they quote, produce Australia's first and only monthly publication that embodies all things geek. So if you're a fan of anime, comics, conventions, cosplay, fashion, gaming, lifestyle, movies, music, toys, TV and more, I reckon Geek Gone magazine might be for you. So they need help to get themselves up and running because at this stage it's all volunteer. So what can you do? Head to possible.com and look out for Geek On magazine and find out what they want to do, because, you got to support these people that are starting from scratch. There's a lot of things happening on at Melbourne at the moment. We have got some interviews coming up. We'll be interviewing the director, Bryce Ives, in a couple of weeks for something called Return to the Forbidden Planet. And it's Shakespeare's long-forgotten rock and roll sci-fi musical based on the film. Who would have guessed? Look, next week, even more. What's happening, Mitch?
We can talk about that in a minute. This is Sci-Fi and Scream on Joy 94.9.
Sci-Fi and Scream.
Sci-Fi and Scream on Joy 94.9.
Now, what's coming up next week, Sonia?
Ooh, a few things. Well, we've got Jess, who's a cross-player, and we've got Kirsty.
Cosplayer.
Who's a cosplayer. So Cross and Cos get together and we're looking at crossplay, cosplay and gender, sexuality.
So gender in cosplay. So it's a really fascinating subject. For anyone who's unaware of what crossplay is, it's either women kind of dressing up as male characters or males dressing up as female characters. It's actually more common for women to dress up as male characters. It kind of makes me think of theatre in a way. Because, you know, in theatre, a lot of women do play male characters, or vice versa.
Originally, in English theatre, women couldn't go on the stage.
Exactly.
So only men could play those Shakespearean roles that we know today.
And so Jess is a cross player, and we get to talk to her and see kind of like what the public opinion is. Like, what is the public reaction to her?
In
the way she dresses? Because she looks a lot like a boy. And. In some cases, it's really pro. In other cases, it's really con. It's also the same for men who dress like women. Like, what do they get? Do they get labelled? Do they get...
categorised?
Categorised, yeah, exactly. Do they get judged?
Or cosgorised?
Cosgorised. That's a good one.
So, yeah, that's next week. That's next week, the 21st.
After Manifest Weekend. So
that's a big weekend.
We'll be looking at what happened there. Maybe have some news from Manifest as well.
Cool, hope so. Also, we're going to have a review of Total Recall, the remake. So that'll be fun. I've also got some more things coming up. We've got things coming up. I've got and face-to-face interview with Bobcat Goldthwait. So we've already played an interview with him over the phone, but this time he headlines at the Myth Comedy Night, and that's coming up tomorrow, the 15th of August. So I'm going to be heading up to have a chat to him, and we'll play that on one of our special interview podcasts later in the week. So yeah, he's the director and maker of God Bless America, which is a gory, violent political satire on American culture that's out now at Myth. I'll also be talking to the director of Mind Games again, and that's Richard Gray. So we'll be podcasting all of that later on. Cool.
It sounds like a really epic show. I'm actually really excited. I love cosplayers. I love cosplaying. I love...
Total Recall.
I can't wait for Total Recall. Arnold Schwarzenegger not in it. The Arnie.
Oh... But I'm sure he'll be back one day.
This is Sci-Fi and Scream on Joy 94.9. Thank you for listening. Thank you, Sonia.
Thank you, Mitch.
See you guys next week.
Bye.
She was a vampire who could never see the light of day.
He was a zombie shuffling his way through the afterlife.
Love would bring them together.
But human flesh would tear them apart.
They were doomed to be on Sci-Fi and Scream.
This podcast was produced by Joy Media. You can support Joy's diverse sound and diverse community this June by donating to Joy Radiothon 2024. Go to joy.org.au/radiothon. And remember, we all flourish with joy.